This is Sarah Stewart Holland.
This is Beth Silvers.
You're listening to Pantsuit Politics,
where we take a different approach to the news. We are so happy that you're here for a new episode of Pantsuit Politics. It's been a newsy week. So we're going to cover everything from Super Tuesday to congressional funding to the daylight savings time switch coming. We know the prevailing mood about politics right now is somewhere between stress and malaise. Here at Pantsuit Politics, we're ready to shake that off. It's time to get focused on our priorities, get some energy. So you might hear a little tough love in this conversation. Please remember that it is love. It is love for you. It is love for America. It is love for the process. And we will end in a loving way, hopefully, outside of politics, with Sarah's predictions and thoughts about the Oscars. And then, because I don't like award shows, as punishment, I'm going to make Sarah listen to me talk about Survivor for just a minute.
If you are a premium member through Apple Podcast subscriptions or through Patreon, please mark your calendar for next Thursday night, March 14th. We're going to have our first Spicy Live. Because if you don't know, on Thursday every week on our premium channels, we have a Spicy More to Say, where we just come and have some hot takes. So if this episode is tough love, this event is a party. It's a unfiltered, there are antics, a little bit off the hinge, and we have so much fun. So we really, really hope that you will join us. If you subscribe through Apple, make sure we have your email address so we can share the login information for that event with you. You can do that through the link in our show notes or by emailing us at hello@pantsuitpoliticsshow.com, and Elise will get you hooked up.
Next up, let's talk about Super Tuesday.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How is your social battery right now? Mine is at about 50%, and I'll tell you why. I have a tendency to overcommit. I want to help with everything I can possibly help with. I want to do everything I can possibly do. I want to be with people, and I forget that at the end of the day, I am an introvert, and I really need time to recharge and take care of myself. Therapy gives me important tools to do that, to recognize what's going on, to understand my battery and where it is and why it's there and what I can do to recharge. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/pantsuit today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/pantsuit. So that I do not like to spend my time or money in salons when I can help it, but I do enjoy a good manicure, and I especially enjoy spending time with my daughters doing the Olive and June Mani system at home. Because we can all get a good-looking manicure for around $2. We know that the polish won't chip and will last at least a full week. We get to await with anticipation the new colors that come out each season. The girls love being able to add some sparkles or choose whether they want their top coat to be matte or shiny. We just have a really good time together with salon-grade tools that are so easily explained so that we can do a really good job taking care of our nails, but do it all from the comfort at home. All the choices of a big salon stored in a basket in my closet for when we're ready to hang out together. The Olive and June Mani system is a real game changer. So visit oliveandjune.com/pantsuit for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/pantsuit for 20% off your first Mani system.
One of the most rewarding things about making this podcast is that we get to hear from listeners in so many places. In our premium community, there's a lot of discussion. We have a Facebook group with lots of discussion. We receive emails from people. And what has come across to me from those groups this week is stress. We said in our last episode that the general election begins this week, and I think everyone is really feeling that as Super Tuesday solidified that we are headed to Biden versus Trump again in November. So I just want to kind of keep that stress in mind as we walk through the things that happened this week and try to take a deep breath together and process the news as we do here.
Yeah, I had my own moment this week where I had sort of not a panic attack, but definitely an anxiety rush. It was, not surprisingly, on Tuesday. And I think I just had to realize, like, no, this is it. This is, even though I knew that intellectually, it's like my body felt it for the first time, where I thought, okay, we're going to have to deal with Donald Trump again. And I don't usually like this stress technique. It's not my favorite, where you sort of play out your worst case scenario to make yourself feel better, because usually that does not make me feel better. It makes me feel worse. But this time it did. I just had to think, like, okay, he could be president again. I just need to accept that. He is going to be one of the major party nominees, and he could be president again. And what would that look like? And how would that make me feel? And what would be the challenges? And what am I probably overestimating about what could happen if he won? And I just kind of had to play it out of my head and sort of rip the Band-Aid off. It wasn't a pleasant mental exercise, but I did find it overall reduced my anxiety. Because I think some of the anxiety that's kind of flooding all of us is just this desperate hope we were holding on to that maybe it wouldn't happen. Like, just, you never know what could happen. Everybody could wake up and step out. And then just letting that go, finally, I think sort of invited a sort of wave of emotion, rush of anxiety. The only way out it is through it. That should be the theme for this whole presidential election.
That is one of my favorite stress reduction techniques. I do it all the time. I also imagine the best case scenario, because I'm much better at imagining the worst case scenario than the best case scenario. So I try to imagine the best case scenario and park my brain there for a while, too. And I hope that we can hold both of those things in tension. You know, as I was thinking about this episode, I'm haunted by the 2016 election when I came on this podcast as a brand new baby podcaster saying constantly, don't worry, guys. America's not going to do this. We're not going to elect Donald Trump. So I don't want to make that mistake again. I also don't want to panic in a way that is completely unproductive and that I really do think is divorced from the facts. You know, I think there are a lot of indicators in Super Tuesday. In a way, it's like a Rorschach test. You can see what you want to see looking at the numbers coming out of Super Tuesday. But there are reasons to me to park our brains in both of those worlds for a second and just deal with the reality that right now it's a toss-up. Who knows what's going to happen in November? So, Super Tuesday. Not so super this year. The turnout was pretty low. I liked this quote from Steve Simon, who is Minnesota's Secretary of State. He says, there are two factors that drive turnout. One is candidates that inspire strong feelings, and the other is perceptions of competitiveness. I think it's safe to say, I don't think I'm breaking any new ground here, that we have a lot of number one and not so much of number two.
Well, not that much of number one if the turnout was low.
But he's saying the perception of competitiveness is not there. And I think that's right. I think you can have really strong feelings about either of these candidates and the sense that it doesn't matter. Your vote is not going to matter in the primary because there is no real competition.
And I, when I'm playing to my optimist side, think that that could happen in the general too. I do think the one big difference because of that experience in 2016 between these two candidates is that because Donald Trump has spent 4 years telling people he actually won 2020, his supporters can think there's no way Joe Biden will win. But there is zero chance that Joe Biden's strongest supporters think there's no way Donald Trump can win. I do think there's at least an imbalance of perception when it comes to the sort, not even, it's not competitiveness. It's like, I don't know, there's the overall chances of something terrible happening that can change the turnout numbers on either side. But it makes sense to me that the turnout was low in these primaries for sure.
So as you probably know, the former president won every state but Vermont by pretty big margins. And yet you still have about a third of voters with Nikki Haley in these states. And a number of exit surveys where people say, I will not vote for Donald Trump in the general election. And I think the location of those voters matters, you know, given the Electoral College. This is an election where a couple percentage points one way or another are huge. And so I think there is reason for Trump supporters to say this is historic. There's no modern precedent for his sweep of these primaries. And I think it's also true that there is some softness here.
Yeah, I think every time I can point out that he's different, this is not the same. They are not equivalent candidates, even if we've seen them run before, is worthwhile. And yes, you know, you had people doing uncommitted in Minnesota, much like Michigan, against Joe Biden. He had an opponent in Dean Phillips. But the difference is these numbers don't touch the weakness of Donald Trump's showing in this party primary. Just because they were all for Donald Trump. I mean, you're talking some places it was close. Sometimes it was like 56-45. Sometimes it was, you know, just barely 60%. It doesn't mean that he didn't win handedly. But, you know, that's a problem when you're coming into a party primary at this stage and you have weakness in your support. Now, it's not an overcomable problem. Barack Obama obviously wasn't blowing them out when he ran against Hillary Clinton. But Donald Trump is no Barack Obama, and this is a very different situation. Dean Phillips endorsed President Biden. Nikki Haley did not endorse Donald Trump. Like, he has so many problems within his own party. Weakness within his own party, which was true in 2020, also when he lost, that I think has only grown.
I would like to spend a second on the graciousness with which Dean Phillips endorsed President Biden. And the sense of humor that he maintained through this whole thing, his tweet about congratulating Marianne Williamson and uncommitted and Nikki Haley for engendering more Democratic enthusiasm than he did, I thought was great. I have a lot of respect for him, actually, and what he did here and the way that he did it. And I am so thrilled that he jumped out and said, this is a person of integrity and character.
I mean, when your fortune is built on delicious ice cream, what exactly do you have to be sad about? That's all I'm saying.
There are many people who built fortunes on sweet treats, though, who do not have a tender soul, you know? So
I don't know. I feel like Ben and Jerry have tender souls. I feel like the Blue Bell people in Texas are lovely. Like, I'm just saying, I don't know. Ice cream in itself does seem to build lovely magnets, just in my own anecdotal evidence.
Well, I want to know what you thought of Nikki Haley's speech suspending her campaign.
I mean, it's a tough one. I know so many members of our audience didn't want her to drop out. They wanted her to win the primary. I'm sure she also wanted to win the primary. The only thing I was watching is whether or not she would endorse Donald Trump. And she did not. And I'm enormously relieved about that. Because I was listening to the NPR politics podcast and they were like, I mean, she hated him the first time and she became his UN ambassador. So it's not like we don't have a history here. And I was like, that's a good point. Please don't do it, Nikki. And I guess it's not too late. She could still change her mind. But that was the main thing I really, really wanted was because I don't think that this was driven by some devotion to Nikki Haley. It was opposition to Donald Trump. She's not stupid. She knows that. And so to say, to me, that's even more reason to like not endorse him. Because what, your people are looking for you to tell them what to do? They're not your people, really. And they're definitely many, 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 many of them not going to vote for him anyway, whether or not you endorse him. So I'm just glad she didn't. I was hoping maybe Mitch McConnell would have a crisis of conscience in his old age and not decide to let this man abuse him and his legacy and then stand up and endorse him anyway. But alas, didn't happen.
I'm really sad that Nikki Haley left the door open here to endorse Trump. The idea that he can earn her support and earn her voter support, like what questions are open about Donald Trump? What information are you looking for to decide if he's earned your support? I think that's terrible. And I think Nikki Haley has been at her best when she has been personally angry at the way he treats her and the way he talks about her husband and the way that he degrades her supporters. She's not going to get less angry now that she's not running against him and he's not talking about her constantly and calling her bird brain and saying, where's her husband? And I feel like this gap of time when they're not one-on-one in a contest will allow her to eventually come back around and endorse him. And that makes me extremely sad. And I wish that she had slammed the door on her way out.
But the reality is that inside this Republican Party, what she did was still a major step. Even leaving the door open but not endorsing him is a damn act of bravery inside this party.
Yeah, and it's the strangest thing. Kentucky's constitutional officers got together, our attorney general, our treasurer, you know, the people that we elect, not the governor, got together and issued their endorsement for President Trump this week. Everyone except our Secretary of State. Thank goodness. Secretaries of State should not endorse candidates, I think. They should be as nonpartisan as possible since they are the vote counters. And I also think our Secretary of State is a principled person.
From Paducah, Kentucky, just saying.
Who perhaps will not support former President Trump. He's actually worked with the Haley campaign. But I was so mad about it. Like, I was just unreasonably mad about it. Because I thought, this is completely unnecessary. Who cares who Kentucky's attorney general thinks should be the president? Who was putting pressure on Kentucky's attorney general or auditor or treasurer to endorse Donald Trump? Why is this fealty, this publicly expressed fealty, so pervasive in this party now that this kind of thing happens?
Well, I have many thoughts about that. First, because this is a party of show, not a party of politics. The more I think about the reporting that there's like this really professional operation out here racking up these endorsements, the more I'm like, for what? Because why? Because you think this is how you're going to win the primary? Now, I do think there was a certain amount of legitimacy gifted back to him by some of these endorsements. Maybe it makes him palatable, but I think that is all of the rest of us projecting onto the Republican base, something that they're struggling with that, in fact, they are not struggling with. They don't need Donald Trump to be more palatable to him. They love him.
I think that's right.
They didn't need endorsements. They didn't care. In fact, I think there's an argument that they would have loved him more if people had not endorsed him. So to me, it's like, okay, you guys are just as blind as you have always been, because this was not an important political task. What you should have been doing is fundraising. You can't do that, though. I don't think you have the skill set. I don't think that it's worth it because everything goes to legal fees. So there's like kind of holes in the strategy that appear to me. Like I said, the endorsements are for show. They're not a political strategy. They're not even a political calculus. I'm not sure how much political calculus goes on in the Republican Party anymore, to be honest with you. Certainly not a lot of policy calculus. Now, you could see it in the way the Alabama legislator hightailed it over there to change the IVF ruling. That was political calculus. Clearly, they're not totally and completely blind. That's a little encouraging, I guess. But to me, it's just, they're all for show, because he's all for show. That's what he cares about, and he runs the party. And so it is performance of fealty, because that is his priority, and it's his party now. It's the MAGA party. Remember, not the Republican Party. We need a new word. And to me, those bullshit like that, let's all stand up together and say how much we endorse Donald Trump, even though there's 0% chance he doesn't win the Kentucky primary. It's just one more piece of evidence that this takeover is complete.
I would just like to add a footnote to your comment about Alabama. The legislature did indeed pass, and Governor Ivey signed into law, blanket criminal and civil immunity for IVF providers. And I think this was done fast, but not well.
Surprise, surprise.
I'm glad that IVF clinics will be able to reopen. I know that this has been incredibly emotional and painful for so many families in Alabama. And so I am happy that people who were awaiting services will be able to access those services now. But in the long run, what happened at that hospital where someone was able to drop those embryos was bad. It wasn't murder, but it was bad. And it's something that those families should have some form of recourse for. And this is the problem when you don't do politics and then suddenly something rises to such a fever pitch that you must respond. You don't have the skill set to respond well. They needed to have a moment of thoughtful deliberation about what this decision represented and what they were responding to. But they are so desperate to say, especially in the wake of the Dobbs decision, no, we don't mean IVF is wrong and bad. Don't tag us with this. That they ended up, I think, crafting poor legislation that will ultimately hurt some families who are receiving IVF services. So it is frustrating. Political parties and politicians should do politics and should do good governance. And when you've thrown all that out of the window, it's not something, it's not riding a bike, right? You can't just suddenly do it again.
Well, and I think that brings us to not just this third party chatter, but, you know, the frustration that many on the left feel with Joe Biden for a lot of reasons. There was this moment where protesters were stalking Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, like star member of the squad. And if you haven't seen the video, a man kind of shoves a phone in her face and says, say genocide. And she kind of comes back at him. She's like, I have. Stop. This is ridiculous. And they kind of keep following her. She was there to see Dune too, which we're going to talk about in Outside Politics. She's just trying to see a movie. And they kind of got in her face about it. And Matt Iglesias wrote this great thing that's like, no, she's a politician. She understands that Donald Trump is worse than Joe Biden. So she's going to do what she can to support Joe Biden. And I do really, really hope people wake up now that the candidates have been picked and this is what we're dealing with, to the fact that you might not like Joe Biden. You might think that Joe Biden's policy in Israel is heinous. But if you think it won't matter that much and that you'll really reset the Democratic Party if Donald Trump is elected, then you don't belong in politics because you don't understand them. And your calculus and strategies are blind to the reality of not only the concerns, priorities of the American public, but the consequences of a Trump presidency.
I think voting uncommitted in a Democratic primary to say something with your vote is a perfectly legitimate expression of your First Amendment rights and the kind of dissent that ought to happen inside parties.
And effective. It's effective.
It's effective. I wouldn't do it because I don't think President Biden supports genocide or has ever not cared about the people of Gaza or feels any of the things that are projected on him from, you know, the group of people who are organizing these efforts. But I respect that as a strategy. That is an organizing strategy that I respect.
I don't disagree with anything you said. I 100% with all the statements you said about President Biden. But I would, because I would think my calculus would not be based on the policy. It'd be based on the politics. And I would, even though I do not believe that Joe Biden thinks, you know, that Joe Biden supports genocide or doesn't care about the Palestinian people, but because I want to make sure that included in his political calculus is the impact of these policies on the progressive left and how important that is to the coalition. You know what I mean? Like, it's the same exact, like, we don't feel any differently about Joe Biden and his stance towards Palestine, but we would make that choice based on different calculuses. You know what I mean? Like, to me, that's why it's a fair and totally, like, relevant strategy.
I think it's a fair and relevant strategy. I also think voting against President Biden in the general election absolutely undermines any goals connected to that strategy. Imagine if Donald Trump were president on October 7th.
Oh, my God.
Imagine what Gaza would look like today if Donald Trump were president on October 7th. And imagine what Gaza could look like in 2025 if Donald Trump were president again. It is completely counterproductive to oppose President Biden in the general election if your heart is with Gaza.
We said this during the October 7th attacks, which is the policy of the Trump administration, because you guys, we don't have to guess. We do not have to guess. We do not have to dream up in our brains what would happen if he wins a second term. We have a first term to look at. And the policy of the Trump administration towards the Palestinian people were take a walk, you're not at the table, and we don't care. Arguably leading to the October 7th attack and the desperation of Hamas wanting to reset the debate in which at least the Palestinian people were present at it, because the position of the Trump administration was you don't exist inside this negotiation. That was their policy.
I also do not think following a member of Congress around a movie theater, shouting at her to say a word. That's what they did, right? When I watched as long of a video clip as I could find of this. And the ask was, say the word genocide so that I can capture it on my cell phone. That, I also think, is completely counterproductive and reductive. It is reductive to just want people to say the word genocide in connection with this conflict and think that that helps anyone. I think that that diminishes your movement. I think this movement has some important things to say, but I think that there are people who have taken the important ideas within it and so reduced them to make them slogans, to make them as incendiary as possible, and that that is toxic. I think there is a ton of toxicity around that movement, just as I think there are some important progressive ideas being expressed. Even if I do not agree with them, I respect what some people are doing there, and I do not respect what a whole lot of people have taken from what some people are doing there.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's for show in the same way those endorsements are, with love. You know, like, and I am not going to listen, and I'm not going to listen to this like false equivalency. They're the same. I heard that bullshit with Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. I heard that bullshit with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And I'm not going to listen to it again because it's not true. And this coalition needs to stay together. Look, I have enormous respect for AOC. It grows every year. I think that sister is as smart and adaptable and politically astute as they get. She is either the second coming of Nancy Pelosi or probably our first female president. Like, she is on top of it. She, to me, she is as smart and astute as Elizabeth Warren. The only difference is she has more of a runway, right? She's younger. She got in the game younger, you know, like, and she's just so good at like understanding the politics, but also authentically naming people's struggles inside a system. Boof. So yeah, that whole scene was so, it was just, I mean, it was silly, and it was silliness inside a issue, a news story, an actual place inside this human experience where enormous suffering is taking place. It is the most serious thing. And to stalk her around a theater like that, thinking that you are bringing seriousness to such a epicenter of human suffering, is just, get out of here. I'm sorry.
We're finally at my favorite time of year. Spring is here. Summer is just around the corner. We're getting our summer essentials ready. Our sunscreen, our emotional support water bottles, our steamy beach reeds. But maybe you would prefer your steamy earbuds. This year, there is a new kind of essential right at your fingertips. Enemies to love. Chance encounters, a slow burn. Friends that become more. Whatever your favorite romantic trope, Dipsy has a spicy audio story just for you. Dipsy is an app full of hundreds of short and spicy audio stories that bring scenarios to life with immersive soundscapes and realistic characters. You can discover stories about second chance romances and adventurous vacation flings. That's my favorite. Hot and heavy hookups. It can be as heavy or as light as you want it to be. This is what I love about Dipsy. It is a modern approach to romance through high-quality, captivating audio fiction that you can listen to in the privacy of your own headphones. For listeners of the show, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/pantsuit. That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to dipseastories.com/pantsuit. That's dipsystories.com/pantsuit.
I recently reorganized my closet and realized that I never need to buy a white blouse or a blue dress again as long as I live. Guys, I have plenty. I did want to add some much neglected color, like pink and yellow, to my closet, and I knew just where to go. Quince always has timeless pieces and a true rainbow of options that can help you build a classic wardrobe no matter the season. It's getting warmer, so I got a soft pink chiffon pleated miniskirt that is so cute, and a really beautiful yellow cashmere tee. It's short-sleeved. It's perfect for the sort of bridge weather we're experiencing right now. And the best part is all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I absolutely love it. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/pantsuit for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/pantsuit to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/pantsuit. Traditionally, financial planning advice is either only for those who are already wealthy or salespeople calling themselves financial advisors who say they'll give you free financial advice but really just sell products to earn commissions. Fearless Finance takes a dramatic departure from either of those traditional models. Their entire business is built on making financial advice accessible and affordable because we know that financial literacy, stress reduction, and financial security are critical to overall well-being. I'm a little bit obsessed with Elizabeth, our Fearless Finance advisor. I've had an array of advisors in the past who answered questions like, should we be spending less on this, with evasive answers like, it depends on your priorities. Not Elizabeth. She answers with actually helpful guidelines. You're spending more than the average family of five, or I'd like to see this increase by 6%. Thank you. This is Fearless Finance's mission, to make advice affordable and accessible. You meet with your planner virtually and they charge you by the hour. You only pay for the time you use down to a quarter hour. Their planners meet with you where you are on your financial journey, no judgment. Visit fearlessfinance.com today. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit, and you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use the code PANTSUIT. That's fearlessfinance.com and use code PANTSUIT for $50 off your first planning meeting.
This is how I pull myself out of the malaise about this election, by reminding myself that politics is about priorities. I can say, ugh, is Biden versus Trump really the best America has to offer? Ugh, I did not want this. Ugh, they are both representatives of the past more than the future. Ugh, I can do that all day long. Or I can say, well, this is where it is, and politics are about priorities. And the priorities for me in this election could not be clearer. And as I look at the Democratic Party as a person who fits uncomfortably under its tent right now, I just want to say, stop beating up people who basically agree with you about the highest priority issues right now.
Listen, the media is not the only group of people that have lessons to learn about Donald Trump's first presidential win and first presidential term. I said what I said, okay? Democrats have lessons to learn too. Democratic activists have lessons to learn. The Democratic Party has lessons to learn. Now, the Democratic Party keeps winning elections midterm as another way. So it feels like they're understanding some of those lessons. But I do think, you know, sort of the online Twitter class is still stuck in this, like you said, like sort of police, we want 100% agreement. There's no prioritization. There's only, you know, life or death, ethical stances. And if you are not with us, you are against us. And you guys, like, it didn't work the first time. It's not going to work this time. Like, I have been obsessed, truly, with Zadie Smith, the fraud. So good. And it's about, you know, like a Victorian era trial and like a sort of second rate washed up Charles Dickens. And you're like, say, what does that have to do with this election? But I would argue a lot, because she's watching this, the one of the main characters is watching this, you know, group of people, emotional, not highly educated, fall for this ruse. It is a ruse. The book is called The Fraud. It is a ruse, you know? And I just like the most concerning thing to me right now is the Trump amnesia. And this desire to just not see, not remember, and not take the lessons from what he did the first time. Because there's a way you can get in a space with 2016 where you can give people grace. Well, he'll get in there and he'll become more serious, right? But we don't have to play that game this time. And I think there's an aspect of, like, all of us were exhausted. You know, it's reflected in the numbers of this podcast that people were like, I don't want to do this anymore. And I think some of that exhaustion was driven by the Twitter class, particularly on the progressive left, where people felt like, it's never good enough. I don't want to be a part of this anymore. I'm exhausted with everything. I just want to ignore it. And I think you know, it's understandable and I'm not mad at anybody. But when we all stopped having these conversations with each other, when we just sort of let it play out and talked about Taylor Swift for, you know, a year and a half instead of politics, not mad at anybody. Obviously, I hope you know in your heart of hearts that really what I want to talk about is Taylor Swift as well. And I think we needed a break, and it is what it is. But now we have got to engage with each other again. We have got to educate our fellow citizens, because otherwise we're going to be depending on short form videos from YouTube and TikTok. And that's not going to save our democracy, you guys. So like, we have got to start having these conversations and saying, this matters. This is why. This is what I understand. This is the information that the experts have presented to me and that I am sharing with you, because it impacted the way I view this election and these candidates. And I hope it will impact you as well, because, you know, I think pulling him off Twitter and Facebook and letting him sort of slide away into the basement of his own base did protect people. And maybe even if he'd been on Twitter, people would have tuned it out anyway. But like, we have got to like re-engage and remind people that he is bad at being president. And he showed us that for 4 years. And so we should just, on the most basic level, not give him an opportunity to do the job again.
I was encouraged by the Twitter reaction to Katie Porter saying that the California primary was rigged without any evidence whatsoever that anything illegal happened in connection with that election. That is such a serious thing to say. And we shouldn't say it unless we have actual proof that something illegal was done in the counting of ballots. Our systems are too fragile right now to casually throw around language like the election was rigged. So the internet encouraged me in that regard.
Because if you are not aware, back in 2010, California changed the rules of its primaries to be the top two vote getters, which makes sense, right? This is a reform we've talked about. In a state where you have predominantly one party control, well, if we do this sort of top two vote getters, then can we moderate some of the positions within the parties so that you are not rewarded for going as far to the right or to the left as you want to? And while I understand Katie Porter's distaste for Adam Schiff basically funding Steve Carvey's campaign, I mean, the truth is that Adam Schiff is a moderate candidate, in particular compared to Katie Porter. And so, you know, I think that let's not lose sight of that. Even if this isn't working the exact way we want it to, I hope that people can still see that. And, you know, I still would like to see this type of primary reform play out in some red states and see how that happens. I mean, they have something similar in Alaska and they got Lisa Murkowski. So I'm just saying.
I am all for reforms that dig us out of the hole that partisan primaries have us in right now. And I also think Adam Schiff is not the first candidate of either party to work hard to choose his opponent.
Word.
It's a legitimate strategy. You don't have to like it. I don't like a lot of things about the way political campaigns are conducted. But there wasn't anything illegal about it or unethical about it. It is what a lot of candidates do. They work hard to choose their opponent for the general election.
Right.
Let's continue to look at the down ballot just a little bit. There is some hope out of Texas. I know that our Texas listeners are particularly discouraged. Ugh. And you have good reason
you
to
have
be.
Such I understand. Good reason to.
I understand. Oh, I do God. Think that Colin Allred would be a good senator. He is currently a member of the House. He is the Democrat who won the primary to face off against Ted Cruz in November. Last time Ted Cruz was on the ballot, he only won by 3 points. It would be so nice to offer Ted Cruz an opportunity to do something new with his time.
He likes to podcast.
He loves to podcast.
That's right.
Yes.
He could do
Let's
that
Let's just let
time.
Him podcast.
We should let him full-time podcast. Okay. I really feel hopeful about this, Beth, and here's why. Here's what I think happens. Beto. Maybe you remember him.
I do.
You know, Beto did the good work of helping people feel more comfortable voting for Democrats. Okay. Those two campaigns were important. He didn't win. We wanted him to, but he got people used to it. Okay. That's important. That builds on itself. But then I think he suffers from what happens a lot of times, which is then they get the chance to sort of characterize him and build up sort of negative impressions of him. And Beto did some of that work for him sometimes. You know what I mean? Remember that? Remember when he ran for president for 2 minutes? Everybody remember? Come on. Y'all remember. He was on the cover of Rolling Stone. I remember. You remember?
Oh, I remember.
Bless his heart. I got no beef with him. Okay. I'm just saying, let's do some honest political assessment. That is the theme of the show. And so I just think there's a real opportunity. I really hope that Colin Allred has a tight ship because it's going to take every penny and every minute to do this. But I truly believe that it is achievable because you have the good work of Beto. You have the fact that Ted Cruz is unlikable. He's not a likable human, okay? And that doesn't mean that I think that he shouldn't be on planet Earth. I think he should go podcast. Lots of unlikable people podcast. Not us. You know what I mean. You know what I'm talking about. And so I don't know. I'm just feeling very hopeful around this race.
I feel very hopeful about this race, too. If I lived in Texas, I would be putting a lot of energy here, I think. I really hope that Colin Allred can pull this out. Okay, North Carolina.
North Carolina, come on and raise. Take your shirt off. Sit around your head singing like a helicopter. I mean, I'm just saying the chaotic energy of that song applies here.
I think we should start with the good news. I think the Democratic candidate for governor is a good candidate. Josh Stein.
He's a Democrat. That's what we do. We nominate normal people. Sorry, I don't mean to be snarky, but it's just true.
He's the attorney general. Well, especially in more red states. Usually people who win their statewide elections in red states from the opposite party do a real good job.
Andy.
Do a real
hello.
Good job.
Hello. Come on.
So Josh Stein is the candidate. If elected, he would be North Carolina's first Jewish governor. His opponent will be the current lieutenant governor, Mark Robinson, who, if elected, would be North Carolina's first Black governor. Mark Robinson has a history of vile and demeaning statements that make Marjorie Taylor Greene look demure. Okay, she wishes. It's tough. And I just love and light to North Carolina through this campaign.
You don't think he's going to clean it up, walk the straight and narrow for the general election?
I just think people are who they are.
They are who they are. That's true. I mean, the love and light needs to go to Josh Stein because he's the one that's going to have to be dealing with this the whole time.
Yeah, love and light.
But hopefully as his reward, he will be North Carolina's next governor.
I hope so. I do think North Carolina, as a Kentuckian with a very red legislature and a blue governor, I'm real happy with our blue governor. Like, I think when you go against the grain in your state, you tend to be extremely popular.
Well, it would work better if our legislator didn't have a supermajority that systematically removes most of the authority and power from our governor, but otherwise, super happy.
You can't elect a good governor and then take a nap. That's true.
No. Right. And so I do think that the promise of this and Texas is if we have some voters who cannot get excited about Joe Biden, they will show up for Colin Allred and hopefully they will show up for Josh Stein. And so instead of a down ballot effect, we have an up ballot effect. Fingers crossed.
Okay. I want to talk about Congress real quick, if we can. We have been keeping you updated on the every 5 minutes we may have a government shutdown dynamic that's been in place since the beginning of the year. And this Wednesday, we did not have another continuing resolution. We had 6 actual appropriations bills passed in the House.
Amazing. You should have warned people to sit down first before you shared that news with them.
Those bills will last for 6 months because the fiscal year does end in September. But they did it. They passed the bills.
This is a long time in Congress, Beth. It's a really long time for them, okay?
They are still negotiating on the remaining 6 bills that need to be passed. Their new deadline for those is March 22nd. Mostly they were able to pass these bills without doing too many things that are very destructive. But I do want to talk for a second about the Kennedy Amendment, because this makes me really sad. Louisiana Senator John Kennedy has been working on this for a while. He says that he wants to protect the Second Amendment rights of veterans, which sounds like I'd like to give everyone ice cream and puppies, right? But the practical effect here is that the VA, which is in charge of healthcare and lots of services to veterans, cannot now report veterans with serious mental health issues to the National Firearms Background Check System, which means that veterans whom the VA has judged to be mentally incompetent will be able to purchase guns. And this news comes out as we have learned that scientists found profound damage inside the brain of the veteran who killed 18 people in Lewiston, Maine last October. That was Maine's deadliest mass shooting. And this veteran who did it was a blast instructor and was repeatedly exposed to thousands of what the AP described as skull-shaking blasts on the training range, which led to him hearing voices and having paranoid delusions. And so I am deeply disturbed that the Kennedy Amendment made it in. I'm so happy that these bills have passed, that the government is funded, that we are not going to just fritter away into fiscal crisis for no apparent reason. But I am really sad that this made it into the legislation.
It's not like the function of his brain was affected. The actual structure of his brain, like they opened up his brain and things were missing. Like it was not all there physically, like in physical form. And let's just pretend. Let's just do a thought experiment. Let's pretend Lewiston, Maine never happened and that we didn't have this new information about the impact of blast. We have lots and lots of mass shootings that involved veterans and easy access to guns. So it is just willfully and deliberately negligent to ignore these previous mass shootings. And you know what is even worse to me? You know what? Let's continue this thought experiment. Let's ignore Lewiston. Let's pretend we haven't had a mass shooting in this country at all executed by a veteran. Let's just pretend that. The suicide rates of veterans is something I thought that we all understood and acknowledged, and something that I thought we all cared about and wanted to reduce. And you do not reduce suicides by increasing access to firearms. You increase suicides by increasing access to firearms. Because when you attempt suicide with anything but a firearm, there is varying chances of survival. When you attempt suicide with a firearm, the chances are almost non-existent that you will survive. This is abhorrent. This is abhorrent.
It is cruel to veterans, right?
It is.
It is cruel to veterans. I am really, really sad about this. I think this is a deeply cynical and destructive amendment. And I wanted everybody to know about it in part because there are a couple of representatives who would typically have voted for these appropriations bills who voted against them just because of this amendment. And so I think it's important to be aware of that. Okay, can we just lighten things up real quick, Sarah, and talk about how it's daylight saving time this weekend?
Listen, we have lots of content on this, guys. We have mined this well. We will share it in our show notes. It's just bad, and we should stop doing it. It's bad for everybody all the time, everywhere.
The change is bad. The change is bad.
We don't have to. We can debate if everybody wants to, which is better, which is probably standard time, according to most physicians and sleep experts. But I don't even care. I just want to stop switching. I don't care where we stick at. Let's just stick.
So we have spent a lot of time on this, which is why I wanted to spend a second sharing the recommendations of sleep experts who spoke with Axios, because we know that the time change switch can often be destructive for people in large and small ways. And these sleep experts say, right now, guys, before the time changes on Sunday, go ahead and start bumping up your bedtime. Just go to bed a little earlier.
It's a good idea. I'm kind of embarrassed I never thought about it with my kids before.
Yes. And they say, especially with kids and pets, just go ahead and start bumping those bedtimes up. And then Saturday night, go to bed as though you are on the new time. Go to bed at your normal time, but an hour earlier so that you can wake up rested on Sunday. They also say you need to get outside early in the morning the week of the time change. Just let that circadian rhythm acclimate.
There's this really cool app called Time Shifter. And it was designed for like NASA astronauts. But now the app is for people who travel across a lot of time zones. And I use it for when we go to Europe, and I already have it set up for when we're going to Japan this summer. And it's so fascinating to watch what they tell you to do. And it's basically exactly that. Like, you know, they usually like 3 to 4 days before you leave, they'll show you when you should be going to sleep and when you should not. They'll show you, because this is not on Axios's list of recommendations, and I'm disappointed, which is also to watch your caffeine usage. And so they'll tell you like when to not drink caffeine, when to start exposing yourself to light, when to sleep on. It's amazing. I love it so much. I pay for it because it really can make a big difference. And I mean, now this is a shift of, you know, like 6 or 7 hours in a time zone, not just one. But I do think you would be surprised how much just doing something small like going to bed earlier the previous couple of days can have an impact.
Let me tie this back to Super Tuesday, if I may. We all say we're tired and we're depressed and we're stressed. Sleep makes a huge difference in how we process hard things. We cannot let ourselves get exhausted. We have to sleep. We have to have energy to do the work of creating healthy political priorities and working toward them. And sleep is the most critical tool in my stress management toolbox. And so I just would like everybody to make sure you're getting 8 hours a night, if you can. Experts say 7+, and I think that means 8. So just get your sleep. We are adaptable creatures. We can get through this time change. We can get through this election, but we must go to bed in order to do that.
Listen, y'all, let's be serious. I'm 42 years old. Of course, I take my skincare routine seriously. There are a lot of daily skincare products on the market claiming to help reduce fine lines and wrinkles, but how do you know your products are actually working? Well, Ritual is here for you. They have Hyacera, their once daily skin supplement, clinically proven to reduce wrinkles and fine lines and increase skin smoothness in 90 days. They conducted a clinical study and it led to a 3.6 times reduction in crow's feet within 90 days as compared to a placebo and a 2.9 times increase in skin smoothness within 90 days as compared to a placebo. I love taking my Hyacera every day as part of my skincare routine instead of just slathering more products on my face. It feels like I'm doing something from the inside out. And their one daily capsule is essenced with soothing vanilla, so it's a very pleasant experience. Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on clean science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/pantsuit. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/pantsuit for 25% off.
Spring is so tricky because I feel the sun shining, the earth is waking up, and I want fresh, vegetable-forward meals. And I'm running in 75 directions and don't have a lot of kitchen and prep time. Fortunately, Factor is here for me and for you with fresh, never-frozen meals that are chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in 2 minutes. They have a ton of options for us, including keto, protein plus, vegan, veggie, calorie smart, and so many add-ons. If you need help with breakfast or snacks or on-the-go lunches or beverages, Factor is here for you. Every meal I've had from Factor is so well composed, it's so flavorful, the sauces are delicious, and Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look for Earth Month Eats badges on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/pantsuit50 and use code pantsuit50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code PANTSUIT50 at factormeals.com/PANTSUIT50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Do you want a bra that's sexy or a bra that's comfortable? Thanks to Third Love, you can have both. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. That's why they made solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school, get smoothing you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made from premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problem solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get 15% off your order with code PODCAST15. Sarah, we always end talking about what's on our minds outside of politics. And I know that what's on your mind outside of politics right now is the Oscars.
Well, I'm just vibing with the movies. I have seen every film and performance nominated in a major category. Very proud of that fact. And you've seen, I'm assuming, just Barbenheimer, yes?
Correct.
Okay. Which I think it makes it more fun. Listen, you guys, that's fine if those all the ones you've seen, because Oppenheimer's probably going to win most everything. So you can still participate in the awards. But there are so many really lovely films nominated this year. I really enjoyed watching everything outside of Poor Things and Zone of Interest, which are what I would argue is experimental in a way that is not, doesn't have a lot of mass appeal to people, which I understand. The rest of them are really just kind of old school, classic, great movie making. Of varying levels. I mean, you got like the big blockbusters. Now, Killers of the Flower Moon is not a good movie and you should not see it. Lily Gladstone deserves the Best Actress nominee win because she carried that entire 3-hour film on her back. But you can skip that one. But the rest of them, The Holdovers, Past Lives, Anatomy of a Fall, Maestro, like they're just great. They're just good. They're lovely to watch. They're well done. They're well performed. They're well written. It's just a delight from beginning to end. So I'm really excited for this Academy Awards because I hope it'll just sort of be like a celebration of filmmaking and all of us going back to the movies to see Barbie and Oppenheimer. I'm really excited.
Is there any particular award that you are very invested in? Like, I will be so disappointed if X doesn't win for Y.
No, because you know what? I think this is what happens when you watch all of them. When you watch all of them, you appreciate the artistry that goes into all these films and how different they are and how hard it really is to compare performances and films. And so, you know, like I would have loved Past Lives to be nominated for more. I would love Past Lives to win more, but I understand while it's not, if Anatomy of a Fall beats Past Lives for like original screenplay, I'm not gonna be mad because Anatomy of a Fall is freaking brilliant. So like, I think that's part of the reason. Now, if I turn on the Oscars on Sunday and freaking Killers of the Flower Moon wins Best Picture, I'm going to be mad, okay? Like, mad, because it's not good. But I don't feel like I'm super invested in any individual performance that I, in particularly the performance categories. Like, this person should win, and if they don't, it'll be a travesty. Because really, they're all incredible performances. I think there's a lot of competition in the supporting actress category, because they're all really good. Same in the actress category. I mean, they're just really, really good.
Well, the only thing I can contribute here is that I saw Dune 2, and I understand that people believe it will be nominated for pretty much everything next year, and I did think it was excellent. But I do recommend, if you are like me and have no foundational knowledge in the Dune world, that you go with someone like my husband who can annotate the movie for you. It is very, very helpful.
You saw the first one?
I did, and I still need the annotations because I find it all very, very complicated. I also want to tell you about the pop culture thing that's on my mind, which is that we have a new season of Survivor. And the most fun thing happened in the newest episode. There is this very nerdy guy named Charlie who feels like he struggles to connect with people. But he is a massive Taylor Swift fan. And on his tribe is a rock and roll lead singer in a band. And the two of them sat down and Charlie challenged Ben to a contest naming songs by his favorite metal band. So Ben picks Metallica and Charlie does Taylor Swift, and they go back and forth just naming songs, and they've got over 100 songs, and the whole tribe is watching just rapt, like this is the most entertaining thing they've ever seen. And they were all like, that tells you a lot about Survivor and time. Like, I was excited to watch these two dudes just name songs. But you would have been impressed with Charlie. He went album by album with Taylor Swift, just naming the songs off. And it was a delight.
But did he win?
Yes,
of
he
course.
Won.
Okay, good. Don't bury the lead there, Beth.
He won. Ben, the Metallica fan, said that he wished he had been more invested in their bad albums.
See?
Because he was really just coalesced around their good work and forgot some of the lessers.
Well,
but Charlie said,
no excuses.
I'm sorry, there are no Taylor Swift albums that are bad.
Also, Metallica has been performing so much longer than Taylor Swift. There's really no excuse, friend.
But it was fun. I love a new Survivor season. I think this one is going to be a good one. If you watch and want to DM me about it, I would be happy to chat. Thank you so much for joining us for everything from Super Tuesday to the Oscars and Survivor. We appreciate you spending your time with us. We will be back with you on Tuesday to talk about the State of the Union address and whatever news inevitably comes up over the weekend. And don't forget that next Thursday is our first Spicy Live for our premium community.
And there will be cussing. The people like the cussing. They really want you to cuss in particular. So no pressure, Beth, but you're going to have to cuss next Thursday.
Okay. Well, I usually can. All the information to join us will be in the show notes. Everybody have the best weekend available to you.
Pantsuit Politics is produced by Studio D Podcast Production.
Elise Knapp is our managing director. Maggie Pinton is our director of community engagement.
Xander Singh is the composer of our theme music with inspiration from original work by Dante Lima.
Our show is listener supported. Special thanks to our executive producers.
Martha Brunitsky.
Allie Edwards.
Janice Elliott.
Sarah Greenup.
Julie Haller.
Tiffany Hassler.
Emily Holiday.
Katie Johnson.
Katina Zuganellis-Kasling.
Barry Kaufman.
Katherine Vollmer.
Lori Ladau.
Lily McClure.
Linda Daniel.
The Hutchins!
Tracy Putoff.
Sarah Ralph.
Jeremy Sequoia.
Katie Steigers.
Karen True.
Annika Uvaline.
Nick and Elisa Vallelli.
Amy Whited.
Emily Helen Olson.
Lee Shay McDonough.
Morgan McHugh.
Jen Ross.
Sabrina Drigo.
Becca Dorval.
Christina Quarteraro.
Shannon Frawley.
Jessica Whitehead.
Samantha Chalmers.
Crystal Kemp.
The Lima family!
The Adair family.
Jeff Davis, Melinda Johnston, Michelle Wood, Nicole Berkless, Paula Bremer, and Tim Miller.